If you're listening to this, then you likely already know that being an independent musician can be a lonely road. And maybe your friends and your family just don't fully understand why you do what you do or why you invest so much time, energy, and money towards achieving your music goals. And especially early on, it can be hard to find people who really understand what you're trying to accomplish and how to make it happen. So that's where Modern Musician comes in. My name is Michael Walker, and you know, I can understand and relate to that feeling. I've been there myself, and so has our team of independent artists. And the truth is that basically everything good in my life has been the result of music. It's the reason I met my wife. It's why I have my three kids. It's how I met my best friends. And now with Modern Musician, we've seen so many talented artists who started out with a dream, with a passion, but without really a fan base, without a business, and be able to take that and turn it into a sustainable full-time career and be able to impact hundreds of thousands, even millions of fans with their music. And we've had thousands of messages from artists who've told us that we've helped change their lives forever. And it just gets even more exciting, fulfilling when you're surrounded by a community of other people who get it and who share their success and their knowledge with each other openly. And so if you are feeling called to make your music a full-time career and to be able to reach more people with your music, then I want to invite you to join our community so that we can support your growth and help lift you up as you pursue your musical dreams. You'll be able to interact in a community with other high-level artists, coaches, and industry professionals, as well as be able to participate in our daily live podcasts, meet these amazing guests, and get access to completely free training. If you'd like to join our family of artists who truly care about your success, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up now.
Yeah, basically the idea is that instead of going to try and find a million people who like you this much, it's better to find 1,000 people who like you this much. You know, I'm way oversimplifying it, but that if you find this core audience of 1,000 true fans, that you can build a really great career now in the age of the internet, and that the internet is really what enables that, that didn't used to really be possible.
Welcome to the Modern Musician Podcast, where each week I help you turn your passion for making music into a profitable career. This is all about you discovering and expressing who you really are, so that you can build a loyal fan base that truly resonates with you and with your music, and you can impact more people with your artwork. I'm your host, Michael Walker, and let's get into it. Hi, I'm excited to be here today with my new friend, Dan Melnick. Dan, it's funny, we were just backstage, I was saying that there's another Dan Melnick that we've interviewed on the podcast, and so we had the wrong bio pulled up here, and thank goodness for ChatGPT and AI. We like pulled up like all of like the summary and the details. And so just to give you a quick intro, Dan is the general manager at Bandcamp, if you're a musician, you're probably familiar with Bandcamp. If you're not, then like you absolutely should be. So Bandcamp is championed for a long time, artist first music distribution and community building and helping artists build a sustainable career. He's a co-founder and former head of product at Reverb, which was a company acquired by Etsy. And he himself is a musician, writer, and a tech leader blending art and engineering. Dan, it's great to have you on the podcast today. I appreciate you taking the time and looking forward to connecting.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. So to kick things off, you know, for anyone who this is their first time meeting you, could you share a little bit about your journey up to this point? And you have like the journey from starting and eventually selling Reverb, I imagine was quite the journey. And also, I would love to hear from your perspective, makes you excited when you wake up? Like, what's the biggest problem that you see right now that you're looking to solve?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. In terms of my journey, I think I've always been very involved in music. I've played music my whole life. I grew up in a very musical household. And I went to college to study music and play music. The other thread of my life that's important is the engineering side. And music was really the impetus there for me as well. I started building websites in the 90s that were all music related. I made a Jimi Hendrix fan website, was my first website. Cool. And then I started building websites for my bands, my friends' bands. And that's essentially how I became a software engineer, was through problem solving around that and continuously scratching my own itch of functionality and just, trying to build cool web applications online. And so, um, So yeah, you know, I'll fast forward through some of that, but yeah, I met David Kalt, who's really the founder of Reverb. I want to make sure it's clear it was his idea, and I was, you know, there to help build it and work on it with him, but I was part of the founding team. There's sort of three, four of us in the very beginning, and that was a really important experience for me, going from sort of day one, let's build the thing, let's launch the thing, let's scale the thing. And so over the course of the 7 years I was there, we went from, you know, that initial team of three or four of us and, you know, $0 when we launched the site on day one, to by the time I left, when it was acquired by Etsy, there was, you know, over 100 employees, and we had an office in Amsterdam, we had an office in Tokyo, and, you know, the run rate of yearly sales around there was, you know, $600 to $700 million in annual sales. So it was a huge learning experience. Encountered a lot of challenges, learned a lot about myself, learned a lot about how things work in practice versus theory, you know, and learned a lot about the musical instrument side of the music business too. Which, you know, when people talk about the music business, I think it's really easy to say, oh, you know, records, right? The record business, the recording business. But I think the music industry is much larger when you take into account musical instruments, live touring, all of those other facets, right? There's really a lot of people and a lot of industry around music. And so, yeah, you know, that was really sort of career defining for me in that sense of getting to go from day one to the acquisition and seeing Reverb become a global brand, you know, was really, and still is, very satisfying. I still love Reverb, use it all the time and follow it closely and care deeply about it, right? I think when you build something, that caring never really goes away, right? Even when you're not involved. Now, I've been gone for going on 6 years this summer since I left. I still really deeply care about it. And to answer your other question about, you know, what gets me up in the morning, I think it's really artists, you know, and I think that goes back to Bandcamp's mission and also just to where we are in the world and how things are changing and where can I have a positive impact on that changing landscape through my work at Bandcamp. I think that's really what motivates me, is making sure artists have a way to make a living, to communicate with their fans, to build a sustainable career, and to do it in the face of this rapidly changing world we live in.
Awesome. Man, that must have been quite the journey from scratch, or from like a founding team to hundreds of employees, $600 to $700 million of revenue per year. And the analogy that came to my mind was something I can't really personally relate to yet, but I know I'm going to have to face it someday, is my kids growing up and then like them going out on their way. And I've heard from, you know, people who have gone through that, it's quite, you know, an experience of sort of, you know, pride and sort of like, yeah, of course you're going to love the kid like as they're growing and doing their own thing, but it's like, wow, like if you built them up to a certain point, now it's time for them to go out and do their own thing. So I can imagine maybe there's a similar kind of feeling with, you know, seeing this company that you've built, you know, from a baby, this little tiny baby that you guys were raising, and now you've nurtured it into an amazing adult, and seeing it out in the world is probably very fulfilling. And I imagine, you know, probably a big shift, you know, kind of coming back to a different, like starting from scratch, in particular with like Bandcamp. It's not like Bandcamp's like a baby, but, yeah, as it relates to this next era of, you know, your journey and, you know, where you see the biggest needs are right now for musicians, I'm curious just to hear your analysis of, you know, having, you know, working at like a part of the core of Bandcamp right now and working with so many artists and kind of seeing what are their challenges and, you know, what are the biggest opportunities right now. From your perspective, if there's an artist listening or watching this right now and they're kind of looking at their own career and life and saying, you know, what's this next year, 5 or 10 years? Like, where should I swim along with to try to capture the next, you know, wave as it crests? What do you see as some of the biggest opportunities for artists to swim along with?
Yeah, you know, I think in especially in times like this of really rapid change, actually going back to kind of the timeless principles and mm-hmm. ways of building become even more relevant again, right? So there's foundational realities of music that haven't changed through any of the technology cycles. Mm-hmm. And those really come down to creating real connections with your fans, right? And the way those have been done traditionally have been through, you know, local scenes, right? Playing gigs, building up that local fandom first, and then going out from that and being able to tour and record and do these other auxiliary things. I think the way that has changed, the way that happens has changed with the internet, right? Where it doesn't have to just be local. But I think for that initial foothold, going for depth over breadth is still the right first move, right? I still believe that you have to find your true believers, you know? And I think the internet makes that possible globally, which is amazing, right? You don't have to just find them in your local scene. But I do think playing locally and playing, you know, in front of people and having that human connection is as important or more important than ever, right? And I have this personal belief that people in the next 5 years are going to be seeking more of that, not less of it, because of the landscape of technology, right? They're going to be seeking more meaning and connection to sort of compensate for how quickly the world of technology is changing. And I think music still sits at right at the center of that, right? It's really our oldest social ritual in lots of ways as humanity. And I don't think that changes in the future, right? I still fundamentally believe in that core thesis of music, bringing people together, creating human connection. And so, you know, once you do that, you have a lot of optionality, basically, right? And I think at the end of the day, when you have connected fans who support you as an artist, it allows you to take more risks artistically because you're not necessarily being pigeonholed for this one thing. You have that depth of connection that gives you freedom to experiment. And then that in turn leads to more longevity, right, in your career. Because if you look at artists who have had really long, successful careers, there's ups and downs. There's little detours of artistic exploration that maybe land or don't land. And when you look at the sort of spiky rise and fall artists who maybe have a hit or find one thing and then don't go on to do anything else, they sort of saturate. They go for, you know, one thing very quickly as opposed to an extended, you know, more circuitous route through their career. So I think, you know, what I would say is don't get distracted by the technology landscape changing, right? Certainly utilize it, explore it, don't ignore it. But at the end of the day, it's still about writing great songs, connecting with human beings, and then trying to figure out how you can make a living doing that. I think those things aren't they're still at the foundational level of being an artist in 2025 and beyond.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. What I'm hearing you say is that, you know, in this analogy of that we're like surfers and, you know, looking at what's the next wave, you know, it's possible to like, sure, like technology, like there might be a new wave. And yeah, if you like catch at the right time, maybe you get a boost and that's like that spike. But really even more important than that is sort of understanding the fundamentals of what exactly is the wave and get good at, you know, swimming along with it. And, you know, and really some of those things haven't changed since, you know, music has, you know, connected humanity since the beginning of it, which is really about the rooted connection and the communities that are built, you know, through you as an artist, you know, connecting directly with your fans, creating good music that brings people together. And the tools might change, the technology might change. In fact, probably going to change faster and faster. But some of those fundamentals of building, you know, that connection community aren't going to change. So those are the places to focus on.
Yeah, and you know, I will readily admit that I am sort of a how do I put this? It might be even sound a little bit naive, but I'm a real believer that at the end of the day, the hardest thing is writing the great song, right? And that's really, it's about honing your craft. And it's really easy to get distracted and say, okay, well, I need to get really good at marketing and all these other things. And even if that's true, it can't compensate for the song at the end of the day, right? And the music is ultimately what people connect with. And the naive part is that I believe the cream rises to the top, basically. Like, great songwriters, I think in the end, even if they mess up some of this other auxiliary stuff, they end up doing pretty well if they stay focused on their craft, right? Mm-hmm. And really invest in the art, right? And expressing themselves through the art. And so that's still my core thesis with music, when it can get really deep now on all of the tools and all of this stuff. And, you know, I work on one of those tools. I understand how important they are, right? But at the end of the day, it's an art, and you have to invest in that first. And if you get too distracted by everything else or the technology landscape, you're going to get diluted in terms of your focus on the craft.
Mm. That's a great reminder. Yeah. So it sounds like what you're saying is, I mean, the first thing that came to mind, and it's probably a better like analogy for this. It's kind of this concept of like putting lipstick on a pig, where it's like marketing, you know, if you haven't solved like the product itself, then you don't really have something worth marketing. So getting more awareness to it is like not necessarily going to give you the best leverage versus just honing in the product and the craft and coming back to the heart or the core of what the value you create is, you know, essential. And that's something that the marketing is maybe a function of. Like, good marketing is sort of like connected deeply with the product itself, but it's easy to kind of lose sight of that if we have shiny object syndrome or kind of trying to figure out the next big hack or the next way to kind of like market. So it's important to remember like the essential of it's about the art and going deeper on your craft and honing that in over time.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Well said.
Mm. Awesome. I mean, the other thing that you shared that, I really liked was the difference between building real connections and going like deep, or like the depth of connection with fans, even more so than like the amount of fans. Obviously both are important. And maybe like the amount of fans is more on the surface. So it's like easier to get like vanity metrics or like social proof or validation by like having lots of like numbers, regardless of whether they're legit or not. But it sounds like what you're saying is that, probably the more important thing is actually the depth of connection and kind of building the roots deep. Even though they're below the surface and maybe not everyone like sees them as much, those roots are what create longevity. And if a storm comes and passes, then like, you know, if you have these solid, true believers, if you have the solid connection, you know, from those roots, that's going to keep you, growing more sustainably.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a particularly important topic in the age of, you know, short form video and, a certain segment of music listener being very passive and maybe not even engaging with knowing who the artist is, right? It's just a song on a playlist that they're listening mm-hmm. to while they're doing something else. And it really isn't about engaging with that artist. And what's strange, and I think confusing for some artists, is that artist who gets a placement on a great playlist can even do okay as a career in some ways, but they might have a hard time touring, right? So mm-hmm. it's this weird landscape where you might have, a lot of streams, but not really a sustainable career outside of that if you fall into those cracks of the music world right now. And, you know, on the short form video part, I think that's even more salient in the sense that, I've heard of bands that have, you know, had a TikTok hit, gotten signed by a solid label, and then had a really bad tour. It's like more than one anecdote, I think, at this point of this cycle, because it created the spike in their streaming activity. They had this little hooky thing that people got an earworm on with social media, or maybe, it was even about the content of the song. That's the strange thing about some of the short form video. It can be just about a little lyric that is being used as a theme in this video performance. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that those people are fans of your music, right? Mm. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try and engage on those platforms. I think that's the dichotomy there. It just means you should know what they're for, know who you're talking to, know why, and know what your goals are as an artist in doing that. Because it doesn't mean that you can't use those platforms to create depth, right? You just have to be a little more creative, and it can't just be about the algorithm getting you out there. It has to be about you being purposeful with how you're using the platform and how your image is being built and how you're then bringing them elsewhere, right? I think you got to get those people off those platforms to really create that lasting connection as fans. And the long careers I think you see are built on that kind of deep fandom, not the kind of quick, spiky flash in the pan.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. It sounds like what you're saying is that there is a benefit to like the short form content and the fact that you can get a lot of reach or things can go viral. But often if that's like all you focus on without that more important piece of building a deeper connection with those people and what happens after they discover you, then often it's sort of like a flash in the pan, which leads nicely to everything that you're doing with Bandcamp and like the platform you built to help artists kind of build deeper roots and deeper connection with fans. So I would love to hear a little bit more. Hopefully people who are watching or listening to this right now are at least familiar with Bandcamp, but just in case like they've like heard of it, but they're not actively using it, maybe you could share just like a quick overview of the platform and the main like benefit that artists can get from signing up for an account.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, Bandcamp's a platform where passionate fans directly support the artists they love by buying their music. So it's a marketplace, right? Where any artist or label can come and put up their music. They can sell digital music, records, cassettes, CDs, t-shirts, merch, you know, any physical goods in addition to the music. And when a fan buys that, the artists get the majority of the money. Bandcamp takes a small cut as a commission, but we only make money when the artist makes money, period. And that keeps our interests very aligned with the artist, where, you know, if we're going out and marketing to sell more, it's because the artist is going to make more. So will we, so will Bandcamp, but only if the artist makes more. And that hasn't changed since its inception, right? Our business model has stayed the same. It's been very transparent. And I think that's part of why it's become, you know, a beloved brand by artists and labels and fans, but also a sort of critical piece of infrastructure in the independent music world and beyond. It's been very steady and reliable in a world that is changing very quickly and is, you know, evolving fast. And, you know, as opposed to Reverb, actually, it's interesting, right? I'm the person who's stewarding that brand now, right? So I'm not the founder. I came in later and I'm inheriting this really beautiful and important brand and business. I think this keeping that spirit of Bandcamp is really important to me. And it's really important that artists look at that history though and see, oh, yeah, this has been a very reliable, steady hand in a rapidly changing music world. Because it started, you know, 2007, 2008, really sort of the same era as SoundCloud. It was part of that era of music technology. And so it's weathered these changes from the late MP3 era through streaming and has grown through that. And I think part of why is that we do have this kind of timeless business model and approach that aligns our incentives, and where if you're an artist who's trying to build that depth of fan base, it's really an essential tool for a couple reasons. One is that, you own your relationship with the fans. So whereas, you know, someone streaming your music on Spotify is just a statistic and you don't really have any relationship with that person or any ability to get in touch with them or market to them without paying for it, every fan you get on Bandcamp, you have direct access with. They can opt in to even give you their email address so you could take it off platform. But even if they don't, you can message them on platform and have that relationship with them. And second, because I think, especially in the age of streaming, being able to charge for your music in some way is sort of a test of that depth of relationship, right? You know, it shows how much fans value you and want to support you if they're willing to open their wallet and pay for something that you've produced. And, you know, it might not be MP3s in 2025, right? A lot of people use streaming. We still sell a ton of digital music, to be clear. And there's a lot of people who love it and use it. But, you know, half of Bandcamp sales are vinyl records, CDs, cassettes, t-shirts, other merch, right? And so every band creates merch, you know, right? Once you get to a certain size. And I think part of that is letting fans express their fandom, right? Like letting them have something that they can hold and wear or listen to physically, right? And that's really where Bandcamp shines. And because of the nature of the platform too, because of the nature of what we've built, we also have this whole community of fans that you can tap into who already have that proof of depth, right? These are already people who've shown that they're willing to pay for art, willing to pay for your music, right? I don't know how you can be an artist in 2025 and afford to not be playing in that sandbox, right? And trying to experiment with, okay, well, you know, there's a bunch of, you know, people here who pay for music and are, you know, really passionate supporters. I would want those people to be my fans if I'm an artist in 2025, you know? Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so good. So, I mean, just to that last point that you just shared, I feel like one of the things that we learned early on with my band when we were touring full time was the importance of direct, you know, to fan connection. And for us, we had the experience when we went, basically at the beginning, we didn't have any fans. We were trying to figure out how to tour successfully. We grew up in South Dakota. There wasn't an audience there. We realized that our favorite bands, when they toured nearby, had thousands of people going out to their shows. And we thought if they liked their music, maybe they would like our music too. So we approached some people that were in line for the show and introduced ourselves and shared some of our music. And to be honest, our music was not great back then. It was like pretty like bad in terms of quality compared to where it got to eventually. But what we found was it was just the most important thing was the actual connection that we were making with those fans. And the point that you just made about like, they were the right fans too. That was such a important part. Like they were the fans who actually showed up and they went to the shows. They spent money to be there. And I think that's such a pivotal part that's easy to miss, that like the sandbox you're talking about, like these are people that already have built a culture. They're already in the habit. You know, it's sort of like Newton's laws of inertia, you know, like who's more likely to come to a show? Someone that's been to 50 shows in the past year, someone who hasn't been in years. It's like that momentum is so important. And you know, the platform that you've built is, you know, a testament to that, because it's been around for, you know, a lot of these storms and transitions. And so the roots, you know, are clearly strong there, and you've built this community. So it definitely makes sense. And and I guess the follow-up question from that would be, for artists who are listening to this right now, who maybe just have a hard time grasping or appreciating the value that they offer with their music, and they might feel like, who am I to charge like $10 for an album when they can stream it nowadays? Or they might just kind of like struggle to figure out how to value themselves, how to value their music, and to offer it or to sell anything. You know, like as a musician, we're like, I don't want to sell anything. Do you have any tips or advice based on what you found like working best for the artists on the platform, or even just in terms of how they think about when they're making an offer or you know, providing, you know, the opportunity for fans to support them?
Sure. Well, you know, one thing that Bandcamp pioneered actually was name your price. So it gives artists the flexibility to also just say, hey, I'm putting my art out there and you can value it however you want. If you're uncomfortable putting a price on your music, you can let your fans decide what it's worth. And even if you do set a price, you can also let fans pay more. And so what we see is 20-25% of fans do pay more than people are even asking. So that gives you a sense of how much fans want to support you and want to do that. And part of it is, it's almost like giving them an excuse to, right? I mean, can you imagine having fans who want to give you money and you're not even letting them because you don't have to take that leap of putting it on a platform where they can do so, right? So first, I would just tell artists that the risk reward there is so skewed, right? Like take the risk. There's really very little, right? You're putting your music on platform. We don't charge you anything until you sell. So it's free to post it. And then the reward is that someone's going to give you money. And when they do, you're going to make more from that one sale than you do from thousands of streams, right? From one sale, right? Especially now that Spotify's demonetized tracks that get less than 1,000 streams, right? You don't make any money if you don't have more than 1,000 streams in a 12-month period on that track, just on that track. So there's that, first of all. And second of all, I think the merch side is really important, right? It's like once you get to a certain point, you got to give your fans something to bring home. It's there's something human nature there that they just want something to touch and hold and own. And from a marketing perspective, yeah, it's great to be active on social media platforms. It doesn't replace it, but you can't put a price on someone wearing a t-shirt with your band's logo or album cover walking around with it, right? I mean, that is still a very timeless and powerful way of marketing your band. And so it doesn't have to be one or the other, right? And I think on the merch side, what I would tell artists is that having a merch game is really important and having a merch cadence is really important because it complements your album release cycle, right? So if you're putting out an album every year or 2 years, having some merch in between or other ways to engage with your fans in between is really important, right? It's important to remind them that you're there, give them some other way to interact with you in between that album release cycle. So Bandcamp's the perfect place to experiment with that, basically, right? Zero cost to get set up and get started. There's no monthly fee. Put up music, put up merch. You have to tell your fans about it, right? Bandcamp's not the platform where you're just going to put stuff up and sort of set it and forget it and expect things to magically happen. I think that's maybe a misconception. It's really a place where you can bring fans, and then it creates a little feedback loop where you'll create new fans once you get a little bit of a snowball going on the platform. So our data shows about 30%, 30 to 40%, depending on how you look at it, of sales come from extra referrals, right? Like, you know, internal platform referrals. And so that halo effect is real, but you do have to get the ball rolling on the platform and get people engaging.
Their 30% of zero is not a whole lot.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think, you know, the message there is, it's like any marketing, right? I think this is a better message, not just for Bandcamp, but for your marketing approach in general, if you're an artist. A lot of it's about repetition. And I think if it doesn't come naturally to you, that's going to be hard. And especially if you're overly focused on your art, you're not used to marketing yourself, it's extra hard. But if you send one email and it doesn't work, you can't stop, right? You have to send that second email, that third email, that fourth email. You have to be sort of disciplined about going out with a message and being present, because most people just aren't paying attention. You're competing for their limited attention span. And so if you're not willing to be you know, repeating yourself and trying to get in front of them over and over again, you're going to get lost in the noise of the world. You know, you want to figure out something that feels good and authentic to you, right? You don't want to be overly aggressive to the point where it's diluting your message or diluting your art. But set and forget, it's not going to work. I'll tell you that, right? And so I think Bandcamp's just a great platform to flex that muscle. Say, hey, we're going to post stuff. We're going to message our fans regularly. We're going to, you know, maybe release a B-side or something too, right? It's also the kind of platform where it doesn't have to be just about official releases. You can do things in between to engage with your fans and give them, you know, a sneak peek into your artistic process. So there's just a lot of tools there. There's a lot of optionality there. And again, there's millions of fans every year buying on Bandcamp that you want to get in front of. So I think that the only way to do that is to try.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like what you're saying with the repetition is that it's easy to get discouraged if your first release or your first try, like posting something, sending an email, like it's not a slam dunk. But the same way that, I don't know, when you're playing a game of golf, the goal isn't necessarily to hit it hole in one in the first try. Like you have to swing and then it's like, okay, like you kind of see what happens. And then it's the repetition of like somehow continuing to swing at this little tiny ball. You can get it into this hole with enough swings, but you need that repetition and you need to keep showing up and giving it a shot.
And it's like you said with your band too, maybe your first music wasn't your best. And I think, you know, there's way outliers who that's not the case for. Genius level, you know, artists and bands, you look at their first album and it's just amazing, right? Most of us are not them. Most of us have to make the first pancake that's like slightly burnt before we get to the second one, right? So it's like, go make the first pancakes. The same with marketing. Go send that first slightly awkward email or make that first social media post. It's how you find your voice and see what people respond to. And then once you see what they respond to, you can double down on that and get better at it and be like, oh, fans actually really like it when I post that video of me, you know, sitting at my desk playing with my headphones on and like messing up a couple vocal takes, right? Or maybe they like this other thing. But the only way to do that, it's really a process of experimentation, but it's also a process of repetition and not giving up on that first try when it flops. And I think you should actually look at huge artist career, because all of them have flops, actually, you know, really across the board. You see, you know, for every hit song, there's 10 that are just like, you know, most people don't really engage with, only the really hardcore fans who listen to the whole album, you know? And so it's that kind of distribution everywhere on these things. And so you have to keep your hand in the game. You have to love it enough to keep doing it and coming back to it and not giving up on it, and but sort of believing in yourself and believing in the art enough that you want to get it out there and get the find your people, right? You want to find your people that believe in it.
Good stuff. Yeah, it does seem like that's an important part of it, is sort of like knowing that it's possible, having the belief that even though, like, you're going in with the right expectation, so not necessarily being like, yeah, I'm going to hit in the first one, I'm going to get a hole in one, but like having the mindset that you're talking about, it's like knowing it's possible. Like, look, there is a hole, there's people there, there's millions of people every year that are supporting artists. So it's just a matter of me showing up and continuing to, you know, to hit the ball, and I'll get closer each time if I pay attention to where it landed.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, the internet is amazing because it makes you possible to do that. And all these little niches too, you know, I mean, think of how many people there are in the world, and Bandcamp's a really global platform for what it's worth. You can find 100, 1,000 people, you know, who are really into your thing. It doesn't have to be a huge thing, and you can still do something really cool, you know? Is it Tim Ferriss who did the 1,000 true fans, you know, or am I thinking someone else?
He might have referred to it. I mean, I think it might have been someone else that originated the idea, but love that idea, and absolutely applicable to what you're describing right now.
Yeah, I think it's that same spirit, right? And the internet really enables that. And
hey, maybe you could share it for anyone who, I mean, maybe people have heard it before, but it's just a quick reminder in case they haven't.
Yeah, basically the idea is that instead of going to try and find a million people who like you this much, it's better to find 1,000 people who like you this much. You know, I'm way oversimplifying it, but that if you find this core audience of 1,000 true fans, that you can build a really great career now in the age of the internet, and that the internet is really what enables that. That didn't used to really be possible in the same way from a distribution perspective. And now the internet's enabled that kind of global distribution where you can find that really passionate, small fan base, but that's your foothold. And it goes back to that same theme we've been talking about of going for depth, you know, because those people, they're evangelists, right? In lots of ways. They're the ones who are going to tell their friend, going to bring a friend to the show, right? Because they love it so much that they're going to be your, you know, street team, right? Out there spreading the word. And you can't put a price on that. It's so valuable when you're trying to build a career.
It is. It is, especially from the standpoint of like the belief too, and the identity. Like if you have a couple of those people or a few of those true believers, like you put it, like, man, that helps keep you going early on when you're taking those swings and you're like, oh man, like it's not big yet, but man, but the Don Semsey, like that guy, he loves the music, and you know, and I know that, you know, people like that exist. Cool. Well, Dan, this has been awesome. Really appreciate the conversation and your focus on the roots, you know, kind of coming back to what's really important in a rapidly changing landscape. It feels like it is important to kind of have voices of, integrity and like foundational like advice come back to the thing that isn't necessarily like a flash in the pan. So I really appreciate the conversation. I appreciate the work that you both did with Reverb and you're continuing to do with Bandcamp. And you know, for anyone that's here right now who's a musician who wants to explore Bandcamp, and you know, there's a lot of different tools that they can use on the platform now, which is awesome. But if they were just like, what's the lowest hanging fruit or kind of like the very first thing, the small bite-sized thing that I absolutely need to do just to get started with the platform? What do you recommend they do as a first step?
Create an account, put up some music, tell your fans about it. Hey, we're on Bandcamp now. We just put up our EP from last year. You can name your price or, you know, whatever. See what happens, right? Or follow us on Bandcamp is another call to action. So like other social media platforms, you can follow artists or labels or even sort of genres and tags on Bandcamp. And it's a way then to stay in touch with your fans, right? Once they're following you, you can message them and it starts to build up that notification base for the next time you post an album or post a piece of merch or whatever that is. And so I think that would be the first thing to do. And then after that, you know, part of what Bandcamp's about too is expressing yourself as an artist. So you can sort of design your page, you can put in your own color palette, your own background, express your brand. And there's lots of great artists across and labels across Bandcamp you can look to for inspiration. But it's a platform where you don't just have to have sort of the vanilla look and feel. And so customize it, make it yours, make it feel like who you are as an artist, I think is sort of the next thing.
Awesome. I like it. Those three steps. I was imagining this as like three pillars on the homepage. You know, create an account, upload your music, you tell your fans about it.
Totally.
Yeah. Awesome. I also imagine probably a lot of artists on the platform who, if you have like a new song or an exclusive download or something that isn't available anywhere yet, probably an amazing opportunity to just like make it available as a pay what you want to get early access to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah, we're seeing lots of artists do that. We're also seeing lots of artists, you know, use windowing on their releases where they release it to their fans first on Bandcamp, let the fans pay on Bandcamp before they release it to streaming so they can make more off their release. You know, they can pay for their next tour, pay for all the recording, all of that through just their Bandcamp sales, and then they go to streaming later. So I think that kind of windowing is a trend that we're seeing and I think we'll continue to see.
Mm, super smart. Well, Dan, thank you again for taking the time to be on the podcast today. Really enjoyed the conversation and appreciate what you're building with Bandcamp.
Thanks, Michael. Yeah, really appreciate it. It was great talking.
Awesome. Oh, yeah. And also, like always, all the links are in the show notes for easy access. So I'd highly recommend if you don't have an account yet, go on signing up for free for Bandcamp, putting up your music and letting your fans know about it. Hey, this is Michael, and I just wanted to say thank you for tuning in to this episode of the podcast. I hope you found it really valuable, and if you did, if you want to share the word, we really appreciate you leaving a 5-star review on the podcast channel. If you want to learn more about the guest, you can check out the show notes for the links. And before you go, I wanted to remind you that I'm looking for new artists to mentor personally. Before we get started, we always offer a free 30-minute coaching call to make sure it's a good fit before you get your campaign launched. At this point, the artists that we've worked with have hit over 561.3 million streams, a number one album on iTunes, and have helped many artists grow from scratch to making a full-time income with their music online. In a few rare cases, they've even been able to generate $1 million per year with their music. That being said, we are very selective with who we work with, just based on who's the best fit and who we can best serve. And because we have a limited amount of time available for those free sessions, we do require an application process where you can submit your music and you can apply for a free coaching call with our team. So if you're interested, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to submit an application, share one of your songs. We look forward to checking out your music, and we'll see you in the next episode.